If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
During a town hall last night, tech entrepreneur Andrew Yang bragged that President Trump has never tweeted about him. Buddy, I'm not sure that's good news. It just means he considers you less important than Joe Biden, Kristen Stewart, and Diet Coke.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to actor Rob McElhenney. Plus, Rob takes a few more questions backstage at Studio AG. But first, a closer look.
Today, the president reeled off a deranged tirade at the White House where he celebrated his sham impeachment acquittal with his Republican co-conspirators. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. After his acquittal in the Senate impeachment trial yesterday, Trump was eager to celebrate, even at events where it wasn't entirely appropriate. For example, this morning, he attended the annual National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, and before he even sat down, Trump started holding up the front pages of multiple newspapers, showing people he was acquitted, a stunt which he then repeated at a press conference a few hours later at the White House. He finally found the one job he's qualified for, newspaper boy. Extra, extra. Extra, extra. Read all about me. Trump, a quitter. Then Trump took aim at both Utah Senator Mitt Romney, the only Republican who voted to convict Trump, and also House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Romney cited his faith in explaining his vote, and Pelosi has said many times that she prays for the president, and Trump decided to attack them for it.
I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong. Nor do I like people who say, I pray for you, when they know that that's not so.
Because what is prayer if not a time to air petty grievances? Then Trump's son, Don Jr., tried to back him up on Twitter this morning, writing, the likelihood of Nancy Pelosi praying for Trump is about the same as the likelihood of Satan running around quoting the scriptures. All right, okay, let's see if Satan has ever quoted the scriptures.
2 Corinthians, right? 2 Corinthians 3:17. That's the whole ballgame.
Even when Trump is reading directly from the Bible, he sounds like he's making it up. He sounds like he's trying to distract a priest while his fellow altar boys steal the communion wine. 2 Corinthians. Oh, there were just 1 Corinthian. There were 2. That's what really made him quite a team. And, you know, you just can't beat 2 Corinthians at the same. I mean, that's a whole ballgame. Then Trump moved over to the White House, where he decided to hold his deranged victory speech or press conference or whatever it was. In fact, even Trump himself didn't seem to know what quite to call it.
This is really not a news conference. It's not a speech. It's not anything.
Then why are we here? He sounds like Simon Cowell berating a contestant on America's Got Talent. It's not a song. It's not a dance. It's not anything. That might be the only thing Trump was right about. This really wasn't a speech or a press conference or anything. It was a chance to lash out at critics, spin wild conspiracy theories, and soothe his wounded ego. In fact, he spent most of his time gleefully shouting out fellow Republicans who helped him cover up his crimes. And the shout-outs kept getting weirder and weirder.
Mitch McConnell, I want to tell you, you did a fantastic job. And Mike Braun, you have done some great job. Thank you very much. Josh Hawley, I want to thank you. You were right from the beginning. Man, did I make a good choice. But Mike Lee is a brilliant guy. He's difficult. Kevin, man, did you do a job. Lucky you're there. Jim Jordan, when I first got to know Jim, I said, never wears a jacket. What the hell's going on? He's obviously very proud of his body.
Proud of his body? Have you seen Jim Jordan? He looks like a ventriloquist dummy who got cut from Jeff Dunham's act. Also, it is so telling. So telling that Trump thinks not wearing a jacket means you're proud of your body, because Trump does everything he can to cover up his body. Not only does he wear those baggy pants and long ties, but he also wears that giant, bulky coat that makes it look like he just snuck out of the White House with all the valuable china stuffed in his pockets. Then at one point, Trump shouted out Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley and claimed Grassley had supposedly scared former FBI Director James Comey into confessing to Comey's supposed secret plot to take down Trump.
A man who got James Comey to choke, and he was just talking in his regular voice. He's got this voice that scares people. You know, people from Iowa can be very tough. We're doing very well in Iowa, but I'll tell you, Chuck Grassley, he's looking at Comey. Well, you tell me, what did you say?
All right, that sounds very scary. So let's compare this scary fictional version of Grassley to the actual Grassley trying to gavel down a Democrat at a Senate hearing.
This committee, sir, is a violation of even the values I've heard you talk about time and time again. The ideals that we should have. What is the rush? What are we trying to hide by not having the documents out front? What is with the rush? What are we hiding by not letting those documents come out? You've called for documents, you yourself, limited documents. We thought there should be more. We have not received the documents that you have even called for.
He's not a senator, he's a metronome. It looks like a grandpa who's been trying to hammer one nail into the deck for 8 hours. Grandpa, just let me use a drill. I don't need any help. I can do it myself. Although there was one imaginary friend Trump couldn't introduce because he wasn't in the room, but Trump said he wished he had been there so that he could have given him an introduction, too.
Honest Abe Lincoln. You know, a lot of people forget Abe Lincoln. I wish he were here. I'd give him one hell of an introduction. But he was a Republican. Abe Lincoln, Honest Abe.
That's right. Trump wishes he could have introduced Abraham Lincoln at his speech today. Of course, if Trump did, he would immediately make it about him and somehow insult Lincoln. Honest Abe, is it? There he is, Abe Lincoln, everybody. So honest, maybe the most honest, although some people say I'm a little more honest. So Abe over there, he's laughing. He's number two, the second most honest. I'm number one. I told you not to go to that theater, Abe. I told you. I told you plays were boring, but of course you're fine. Nothing happened to you, so I don't know why the audience groaned. You're here in this timeline. In this timeline, you're fine. You're 200 years old, and you're right there, and you're laughing at me, and we're friends. Trump's rambling non-speech fever dream, or whatever the hell it was really just a showcase for our perpetually aggrieved and wounded president to nurse his ego, relive old glories, and lash out at random critics and shadowy imagined opponents. For example, Trump claimed that his 3 years as president had been marred by traitors trying to take him down and kept using a few insane phrases in particular.
It was evil. It was corrupt. It was dirty cops. It was leakers and liars. The bad ones, the leakers, the liars. The dirty cops, horrible, dirty cops. When I fired that sleazebag, it was the top scum. We caught him in the act. Dirty cops.
Is he whining about impeachment or narrating a movie trailer?
It was the bad ones, the leakers, the liars, the dirty cops. And the only one who could take them down was Serpidope.
I hope this is a reminder to everyone who thought Trump had somehow managed to restrain himself during the State of the Union 2 days ago that Trump we saw today was the real Trump, and it's the Trump we're going to keep seeing for the next 9 months until the election, because it's pretty clear from his vengeful, celebratory tone that Trump wanted this to be the week that, for all intents and purposes, he kicked off his 2020 re-election campaign. Although, I'm not sure Trump ever really stopped campaigning. He spends more time in arenas than Jon Bon Jovi. You ready to rock, Kansas? This is Missouri, you idiot! For example, during his White House tirade today, Trump bragged about his near-unanimous victory in the Republican Iowa caucus on Monday, even though he's the incumbent president and everyone expected him to win easily. But Trump still sent a big team to Iowa on Monday as a show of force, including his adult gargoyle sons, Eric and Don Jr. And Don Jr. relayed what Iowans have been telling him throughout his time campaigning in the state.
Honestly, the biggest thing I get is thanks. It's someone telling us, thank you for the sacrifices that your family is making because you didn't need this job, right? The presidency wasn't the next natural progression for my father like it would have been for Hillary, where it's her turn, right? He'd actually done things in the real world. He needed this job, frankly, like a hole in the head, especially understanding the resistance that he was going to get.
All right, but are you sure he doesn't already have a hole in his head? Listen to him talk and tell me he doesn't have some hole in his head.
10,000 known or suspected gang members advising lawmakers
will not be tolerated.
Yes, you see, Democratic lawmakers suspected that Trump had committed a crime, but ultimately Republicans decided it could be tolerated. That was Monday, and then on Wednesday, Trump was hoping his week would be propelled even further by an acquittal in the Senate on party lines, where he expected to receive 100% support from Republicans. And while it's true that Trump was acquitted, his good news was stepped on by the fact that Republican Senator Mitt Romney sided with Democrats and voted to convict him. Romney rained on Trump's parade, which is bad news for Trump because he doesn't know how to use an umbrella. But seriously, even with the acquittal, that one vote is a historical stain that will remain on Trump's presidency forever. That fact's going to show up on Trivial Pursuit cards years from now. Who is the only president in history to have a senator of his own party vote to remove him from office? Hint, the answer is not...
Abe Lincoln, honest Abe.
Now, Romney knew he would pay a political price for this decision because Trump allies had already warned that if Republicans vote against the president, your head will be on a pike. And Romney was asked about that danger in an interview on Fox News.
You realize this is war. Donald Trump will never forgive you for this.
There's a hymn that is sung in my church. It's an old Protestant hymn. Which is, do what is right, let the consequence follow.
There's probably no better way to flummox Donald Trump than by quoting a religious hymn, because he has no idea what it means. When Trump hears the phrase old Protestant hymn, he probably thinks it's referring to a member of his cabinet. Oh, yeah, I got a bunch of old Protestant hymns, and I got one Protestant her. And sure enough, Trump did fire back at Romney yesterday with a bizarre ad aimed at a member of his own party, accusing Romney of being a secret Democratic traitor. But I'm not sure the ad had quite the damaging effect on Romney that Trump hoped it would have.
Slick, slippery, stealthy. Mitt Romney had us fooled. Posing as a Republican, he tried to infiltrate Trump's administration as Secretary of State. Now his cover's blown. Exposed by news reports as a Democrat's secret asset.
Look, I'm no Mitt Romney super fan, but you do realize this ad makes him look incredibly cool, right? I mean, I didn't think it was possible to take a boring private equity robot like Romney and turn him into James Bond, but somehow Trump did it. Literally wearing sunglasses, and you describe him as slick, stealthy, and a secret asset? You might as well give him a martini and Aston Martin and put him next to Pussy Galore. Miss Galore, do you mind if I read you an old Protestant hymn? Call me Pussy Mitt. Oh, no. I'm not gonna do that. Absolutely not. And yet, while Romney stood alone among Republicans in holding Trump accountable, others who voted to acquit Trump tried to dodge questions about their votes, especially the deeply vulnerable senators facing re-election in swing states in 2020. Take Maine Senator Susan Collins, who sided with Trump on impeachment, but also tried to claim in an interview with Fox News last night that Trump had learned his lesson.
Will something in you be disappointed if you never see any evidence that he has learned a lesson or if he does something like this again?
Very much so. I hoped that the president would have learned from the fact that he was impeached by the House. There were so many of us who are Republicans in the Senate who were very critical of the call. The call was wrong. Parts of the call were fine.
What do you mean parts of the call were fine? He nailed the hello, and I thought the goodbye was solid, too. Put it right back in the cradle when he was done. Also, why do you think Trump would have learned anything? Just today, he said the call was perfect. Again, Trump isn't capable of learning. Doesn't matter what the subject is. Spelling, geography, he never learns. Remember, this is a guy who misspelled his wife's name and his own name and who has literally invented multiple fake countries.
Tanzania.
Nambia.
Yes. Tanzania and Nambia. This guy is the president, and he doesn't even know basic geography. If you said Bangladesh to Trump, he'd go, why? Is Ladesh hot? Collins was then asked if Trump had given her any assurances that he had learned his lesson, and she admitted he had not.
Did he give you any assurance that he would not do something like that again, except foreign help in anything related to someone that might be running with him? Did you talk to him about it at all?
I've had no conversations with him throughout the trial.
So why do you have that feeling that he has changed, that he learned a lesson?
Well, I may not be correct on that. It's more aspirational on my part.
Oh, it's aspirational. That's nice. Do you have one of those motivational posters up in your office? You know, like the one with the cat that says, hang in there, he might not be a criminal. Then there was Colorado Senator Cory Gardner, another deeply vulnerable Republican facing a tough re-election in a swing state. Gardner also sided with Trump on impeachment. Last night on a local news station, he was asked repeatedly if Trump's actions were appropriate and would not answer the question, while also insisting he was answering the question.
Do you believe it's appropriate for the President of the United States to ask a foreign leader to investigate a political rival, yes or no?
That wasn't the question that we had last night or that we had in impeachment.
Was the president's behavior appropriate, though?
But that wasn't the question.
So clearly not answering that question. Is that?
Well, I did answer the question about impeachment.
No, you didn't. These guys all have the same Trump brain disease where they think they can just Jedi mind trick us into not believing what we're seeing. That's why Trump's always doing that thing with his hands, you know? He's trying to pull an Obi-Wan Kenobi on us, but instead he just looks like he's playing an invisible accordion. Those aren't the droids you're looking for. You guys want to hear a polka? You want to hear a polka? The fundamental tenets of Trumpism and the modern Republican Party are grievance and paranoia, and that was on full display in Trump's deranged press conference today. But vulnerable Republicans in swing states are struggling to defend that behavior because a majority of Americans in polls still believe that the president's crimes cannot be
tolerated.
This has been a closer look. Our guest from his work is Mac on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He co-created and stars in the new show Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet, which begins streaming February 7th on Apple TV+. Please welcome to the show Rob McElhenney, everybody. How are you?
I'm very excited.
I'm very excited to have you here. I'd been a fan of yours for a long time, and then we met at an Emmys a couple years ago.
Yes.
Backstage, your wife, Caitlin Olsen, was presenting. And we met in a bar. There was a backstage bar.
Well, yes. So just to be clear, I was at the Emmys not because I was invited to the Emmys by the Emmys.
Right.
I wasn't nominated for anything, but my wife was being asked to present.
Right.
And I was invited to the Emmys by my wife.
Yeah. Any invitation, they say, is an honor, no matter who it comes from.
I guess. I promptly went to the bar.
Yeah.
And spent the majority of the night there. And that's
It was a very small bar, and it was a lot of fun to be back there.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was sorry, way more fun than being in the audience for the Emmys.
I wouldn't really know, because I don't spend a lot of time at the Emmys.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only one.
Which I should say is a giant oversight, and I mean this with all sincerity. Always Sunny in Philadelphia, coming into its 15th season, which is incredible. The Emmys has a lot of explaining to do, as far as that goes.
I like to think so. What year is this show in?
Six.
Oh, your babies. Yeah. Look, if you ever need any advice in terms of television, I'm happy to
walk you,
you through it.
We have something in common, which is we both have a child named Axel.
Yes.
And how did you come about your name of Axel?
Well, we live in Los Angeles, first of all. So it's really funny because my kids go to school in L.A., and there's a lot of very interesting names. Sky and pavement and spring and fall and wolf and howl and things like that. And we were thinking of, we wanted to find a strong name.
Yep.
And a name that meant something to us. And most people think that we went with Axl Rose.
Yep.
Because of Axl Rose. And, of course, I'm a big GNR fan, but that was not our inspiration. I don't know what your inspiration was, but ours was something else.
Which was?
Axel Foley.
Axel Foley.
Yeah, which means
Beverly
like
Hills
literally
Cop.
Nothing to anybody under the age of 40.
Yeah, exactly. But that's really good for Beverly Hills Cop.
Foley's from Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, that's great.
Eddie Murphy.
There you go. And was your family happy? Because when I told my parents Axel, I felt like they didn't think it was awesome.
No.
Yeah.
My family was not excited. I come from a very large Irish Catholic family in Philadelphia, and we are all named Robert or James or Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. And my grandmother, especially, and look, very supportive people.
Yeah.
My grandmother was like, Axel. Well, we'll love him anyway. And I was like, of course you will. Of course
you will. And then what's your other son is?
My other son is Leo.
And was that well received?
That went over really well.
Why was Leo so much better?
So we originally thought, first of all, we just picked Leo because we thought it was a really cool name, a nice name. And my grandmother was very excited. And she had a brother named Leo. So he would have been my great uncle. And she was very excited about the fact that we believed that we were naming this child after a family name. And then so we said, yeah, Grandma, I'm sure, whatever makes you happy. And then she said, oh, no, I'm just happy that you named your son after the Pope, Leo. Pope Leo the Grand, I suppose, I don't know. And I said, yeah, sure. We'll love him anyway.
Yeah, there you go. You got to give him what you want. So this is this new show, Mythic Quest. This is about the world of people who basically build video games.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet.
Many apologies.
And here's why. Yeah. We wanted to make sure that the title was as ridiculous as possible.
Yeah.
Just like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure we confused as many people as possible.
Yeah.
And then you could barely fit it on a poster.
Yeah.
We felt like we had a good track record as far as that went.
Yeah, just like bad titles that if you market tested them, it would come back with a very bad score.
There's a lot of confusion. When people ask me, what is the name of your show? I say, Mythic Quest. And they kind of go, oh, okay. And I go, Raven's Banquet. Like, what does that mean? Is that a banquet of ravens? Is it one single raven that's gorging upon a feast? And I'm like, look, man, I don't know. But it doesn't matter because the last one works, so I'm assuming this one works.
Yeah, you got 15 years in you on this one, too. Yeah. How did you, you actually went and visited a place where they build these sort of open world games, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, so we were approached by this company called Ubisoft, which is one of the biggest gaming studios in the world. And they invited me to come check out this game development studio, and it was really cool. So we walk in, and originally I was reticent to want to do a show in this industry for various reasons, but I was on the fence, but I figured, hey, it's a free trip to Montreal. I'd never been to Montreal. Let's go drink on their dime. That'd be cool. And so I walk into this game studio, and I'm looking around, and I see this guy, and he's, like, out, like, across the hall, and he's dressed head to toe in black. He's got these cowboy boots, and he's got rings and necklaces and this long beard, and he had a cane, right? But he was probably 35. And I realized there was no limp or anything like that. He was just, I realized it was like just an accoutrement, like a little like artistic flourish that he had. And I walked up to him and I said, hey, how you doing, pal? He said, good. I said, what do you do? He said, I'm a creative director. I said, I don't know what a creative director does. What is that? And he just sort of took a moment, like a longer moment than he should have. And he like looked out into the distance, which was mostly like fluorescent lights. And he goes, brother, I build worlds. And I was like, could you excuse me for 1 second? And I walked outside, I took out my phone, and I called Charlie, and I was like, we are doing a show about these people.
There you go.
There you go.
Every now and then you need inspiration.
And that was it.
Congratulations on that. Congratulations again, sincerely, for Always Sunny. What an incredible run. So happy it's still going. That's Rob McElhenney, everybody. Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet, begins streaming Friday on Apple TV+.
Hey, this is Kevin. We are backstage with Rob McElhenney of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Mythic Quest, Raven's Banquet.
I'm excited to be here.
You guys created It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia sort of when FX was starting as a network. You're doing this for Apple TV+. Is there any sort of similarities that you see between sort of being one of the first shows on a network or a platform when it's launching?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that's probably one of the most exciting things for us is that it was really scary in the beginning. The truth is we didn't have much of a choice in the beginning, although we did have a number of different networks that were interested in the show. We just felt like FX really got what the show mm-hmm. was and then allowed us to not only make the show, but then do it the way we wanted to with me. I was a waiter, right? And they still allowed me to be the showrunner. And a lot of the other networks just weren't even going to have that at all. And I think part of the reason was because they were just beginning as well. And they were taking chances on people and they took a chance on us. And so then when we cut to 15 years later and we're going out and pitching another show, we had a few offers from a number of different streamers and premium cable networks and even network. And we decided to maybe take another chance even though it's Apple, a $1 trillion company,
yeah,
and literally the biggest company in the history of humanity. But we didn't know how the streaming service was going to work. We still honestly don't 100% know if it's going to work. It seems to be working, but we knew it was a bit of a gamble. But we figured, you know, that's part of the fun. Let's see what happens.
What was the pilot like for It's Always Sunny, and where did you and Charlie and Glenn first meet? How'd you guys get together?
The major difference between the pilot of Sunny versus the first episode of Mythic Quest is, I couldn't quit my job waiting tables when I directed the pilot of Sunny, and because they paid us so little, I wasn't able to quit until after they had picked up the entire first season. And beyond that, we were shooting on standard def cameras, and we were shooting a 4:3 ratio. I mean, it was a very different experience. But for us, we were 26 years old, and it was just like run and gun, super fun, and we had this incredible opportunity. We weren't going to blow it. And then also, it was like we had nothing to lose. It was just a pilot, and we didn't know if they were actually going to continue making the show. Whereas the first episode of Apple, they picked up the entire series right when we pitched it. Mm-hmm. So we knew that we had a series to build on, which actually there's a lot less pressure and a lot less stress because you don't have to get it all right. Mm-hmm. And with a pilot, it's such a flawed process because there's so many things that have to come together to make something work. And if you know you can fix it retroactively over the course of a season, then it actually takes a lot of the stress out of it. And all of this experience that we had coming into the experience, you know, I'm now 42, and have been making television for 15 years, I knew some of the pitfalls and some of the things to avoid, and then also was able to retroactively fix the first episode, which we did over the course of the first season.
Yeah. How difficult is that to show run, write, star in a show, to sort of wear all those hats, so to speak?
I don't really know how to do it any other way because that's the only way I've ever done it. And I don't think I would have it any other way. I really enjoy the process. And we've figured out a good paradigm through working on Sunny. And we had the luxury of working on Sunny with great partners, two great partners on that. And also because we were so young and didn't have significant others and didn't have kids, that we could devote all of our time and efforts and energy to it. And then as we grew older, we realized that our partners and our children meant more to us than the show itself. And so we needed to figure out ways in which we could divide our time so that we didn't give up the quality of Sunny, but also didn't give up the quality of our home life. And we were able to build on that, create that and then build on that. And so Mythic Quest is an extension mm-hmm. where I just decided that I love what we do. I want to make a great show, but I will never sacrifice my time with my children or with my wife. And there is a way to do that. And so being able to create that paradigm by making Sunny and then just continuing that with Mythic Quest has really been a joy.
What were your comedy influences growing up? We were talking a little bit earlier today, and you were saying a little bit George Carlin, a little bit Marx Brothers. Sort of. When did you know that you wanted to get into comedy and perform and work in television and film?
Well, I didn't want to get into comedy, I think, at all, up until right before we started doing Sunny. I was a professional actor and never considered myself a comedian or even as a funny actor. Especially when you're surrounding yourself with people like
you know, Charlie Day, and you're like, well, I can't be as funny as this guy. Or Glenn, you meet somebody like Glenn, and you're like, well, this guy's able to pull off things that I could never pull off comedically. And then we have friends, you know, who do stand up, and I'm like, I would be terrified to get up in front of a room full of people and make them laugh. So I was more, I was always considered myself more of a dramatic actor. Mm-hmm. And then it was just by function of desperation that I started writing, because I wasn't working in any other way. And it was much easier for me to write comedic shorts, because they were easier to get Charlie and Glenn to want to do them. Mm-hmm. So then I just started to learn from people like them. Now, like, I look back at my life and I say, oh, wow, I was exposed to, I remember watching when I was a kid, Marx Brothers movies. My dad loved the Marx Brothers. And mm-hmm. so I would watch every one of the Marx Brothers movies, which even, you know, for my dad's generation, it would be strange, because those movies were coming out in the 30s and the 40s. Yeah. Which, and he was raised, he was a baby boomer. So his father was the one that introduced him to the Marx Brothers. And so I had the pleasure of being able to watch those movies as a kid. And I just think they just were an indelible part of my subconscious. Yeah. And then couple that with my favorite comedian was George Carlin, and my dad's favorite comedian. So I would watch George Carlin with him. And I remember pretending to laugh, because I didn't get it, but my dad was laughing, so I knew I had to laugh because he got it, so I had to get it. And it wasn't until much later when I realized what Carlin was saying, because I had the intelligence to understand what he was actually saying.
Well, Rob, thanks so much for being here. Good luck with the show, and come back again soon.
Thanks for having me. I would love to be back.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.